thanks for joining us on the next instalment of PRI's podcast. For this one, we'll build on lots of work PRI team, helped by our Asset Owner Advisory Committee, has been doing in relation to the selection, appointment and monitoring of asset managers. More specifically, this podcast will discuss the integration of ESG issues and beneficiary values into investment mandates. We've got two great speakers from both sides of the Atlantic, Daniel Ingram, VP of ESG at Wiltshire, one of the leading US investment consultants, and Marcel Jonken, CEO of Sustvins, a specialist ESG consulting firm based in the Netherlands. Both speakers have extensive practical experience of advising asset owners in exactly this area at PGGGM and BT Pension Scheme. My name is Toby Belson. I'm Director of Investor Practices at PRI, and I'll be moderating this session. Daniel, maybe turning to you first. Why do you think integrating ESG and outcomes into mandates is so important? And what's your experience of working with asset owners trying to put this into practice?
Well, thanks, Toby. I'm really nice to talk to you today. Great to be part of this. Look, I mean, I think you're absolutely right. We're, you know, 15 years in my experience speaking to hundreds of asset owners a year. And, you know, there's very much this focus now on for asset owners putting ESG into practice. It really is this kind of fundamental shift from, you know, asset owners starting to ask the question about to what extent ESG issues are financially material, and now they want to know how to efficiently integrate ESG into their investment decisions and whether there's any low-hanging fruit to do that. And I really do think that the investment mandate is part of that sort of low-hanging fruit, as it were.
Marcel, I know you've worked with PRI extensively in terms of developing our thinking for signatories on outcomes. Just what's your experience sitting in it from a European context on outcomes and investment mandates?
Yeah, thanks, Toby, and good to be here also, as well, and also with Daniel, and you know, we'll go back long. And, you know, we've gone on a very long journey in terms of integrating ESG and in various spaces. And I think this is crucial work that we do on investment mandates. And it's very good that we not just focus on the ESG risks and opportunities, so to speak, on the investment portfolio. But what we increasingly also see is a focus on outcomes in terms of what we as investors, our investor actions do in real world impact, in real world outcomes in the world. And that is a matter that is relevant for the entire investment portfolio, not just for tiny bits, which might be called or labeled impact investments, but for every part of the allocation of asset owners. And increasingly, this is being seen by many asset owners, at least in the part of the world I'm in. And that's also the project that the PRI worked on last year, and the report called Investing with SDG Outcomes focused on, basically, not just on that perspective of how sustainability or the world, so as we speak, impacts investment portfolios from a risks and opportunities perspective. And that's with the materiality lens, the single materiality lens, but also how investor actions actually impact the world. And that's important from a responsibility perspective. If you think about pension funds, for example, that have investment horizons up, or, you know, fund horizons up to 70 years or longer, they care about not just the risk and opportunities to their investment portfolio, but also to how they contribute to what kind of world their beneficiaries will live in. And increasingly, we see that up in policies or asset owners saying it's not just about having a good financial return, but also a good societal return. And this impact, this focus on outcomes, is increasingly being picked up and is increasingly now also being part of attaching that to investment mandates. So that's a crucial part as a next wave, I would say, in terms of our responsible investment development globally.
Kind of following up from that, Marcel, with COP26 and the rapid growth of the Net Zero Asset Owner Alliance, you've seen asset owners make an increasingly broad range of climate commitments. And what are the main tools to put those into actions? Our report, and the one that you referred to just then, talks about the investment mandate being a really underutilized tool in that function. Why is this, and how do you think it can be rectified?
I think it's a proper question. I think, well, to the first part around climate, and outcomes. I think what investors increasingly are seeing, and that's why we see so a huge uptake on net zero, is that the outcome they can have in the world is ultimately also in a feedback loop, a risk and opportunity to their portfolio. If we don't solve the climate crisis, so to speak, you'll end up with portfolios that have stranded assets, are underwater. And so from a policy perspective, it's quite crucial that we have to focus on those outcomes. And it's great to see so much uptake on the net zero. What it leads to is then a question, how should we tweak our existing mandates or set new mandates in terms of either reducing the carbon footprint or investing in the energy transition that's on the table. So these commitments will trigger what this report that Wilsch and PRI and Sussman have worked on in terms of both the existing mandates. How can you attach higher expectations to something you already agreed in terms of especially climate, but it can also be another stuff. But also in terms of how can you set new mandates? And that's where we see a proliferation, I think, of ideas, not just coming from asset owners, but also from asset managers providing solutions. And I think that's the good thing. You know, once we all get these commitments in, and net zero is an important development, it will lead the asset management industry to think about how they can come up with solutions that integrate that perspective. So to get better climate outcomes, so to speak, or have less climate risk in your portfolio, or have your portfolio more moving towards the new economy, so to speak, the carbon neutral economy. So this mandate perspective is crucial in getting those policy commitments done.
Daniel, as we're working through the development of this report, or from your experience working with other asset owner clients, I wonder whether you've got anything to add there about transposing climate commitments into action through investment mandates.
Right. We're trying to be very clear about what kind of actions asset owners can take. Again, coming back to this idea of sort of low-hanging fruit, we sketched out four actions, the first being climate risk assessment, the second governance preparations, the third, evaluating the options, and then fourth, and I think this is really relevant for the investment mandate, is holding agents to account. So in this case, you know, the fourth step in terms of the agents, I think there we're very much talking about this relationship between the asset owner and the investment manager. And to your point, I think, you know, we really found as drafting this report that the mandate itself may be being underutilized because there's often minimal turnover. A lot of these investment mandates that asset owners have put in place have been there for many years, you know, certainly over 5 years, and that relationship has formed over time. So it's not always as simple as sort of, okay, how are we going to reach net zero? We'll redesign, reissue every investment mandate for our entire asset allocation with climate risks, for example, front and center in that design and selection process. So what really we're finding, I think, particularly as part of this report, is that probably the low-hanging fruit is actually like we're talking about focusing on the sort of resetting the expectations with the manager around the existing mandates. And so really that, I think, starts with a series of questions in terms of holding managers to account, asking them, while we're talking about climate, can you provide example of security or asset buy sell decisions, where climate was material to those decisions. I wouldn't be surprised if asset owners start, and I think we're seeing this a little bit in Europe, start drafting specific sort of climate expectations to their managers. And so, maybe as some of those new mandates start to become issued, you might see, as gating questions, asset owners start to say, you know, have you signed up to a net zero target to the manager? Have you issued an interim net zero target? So we may start to see climate being part of the kind of core minimum qualifications to start to be awarded some of these mandates. So I think we will see a blend of the new and the existing mandates when it comes to climate risk management.
Thanks, Daniel. But Marcel, what's your kind of European perspective on that?
It's about the opportunities of the energy transition, ensuring that the manager also invests in that so that you reap some part of that. And in terms of your overall different and diversifying nature of your asset base, you're also picking up on those new assets and these new opportunities that the transition around climate will shape those portfolios. But also from a perspective of outcomes, how you can actually then say, this is where we want to move. And so your net zero ambition, for example, has to be brought back to a methodology that you actually say for both existing and new, this is where we want to get. And so raising those expectations with short-term objectives, so not just 250, but then also 240, 230, and 225 in terms of what we want to achieve. And that's not just from a risk and opportunity perspective that can be important, that lens can be important, but can also be very important from an outcome perspective. But that's what we increasingly are seeing. There's one other note I wanted to make. The focus should be to a large extent also on existing, because that's where most of the current assets are. But especially in private markets, money comes back. And so you will have a lot of new mandates as well. So as an asset owner, you should really think also about new mandates. Some funds are really growing, so they will have new mandates. It's not just that the bulk is just in existing, but it's important to make that distinction, but also to learn from both sides, to what you can actually achieve in new and what you can raise expectations in existing, but also what you get back from existing, what you can't achieve in terms of your expectations, how you can then try to tweak that into something that can work in new. And so taking this holistic perspective on both and understanding the difference between existing and new is crucial.
Daniel, segregated mandates are often seen as the preserve of larger asset owners. What tools are open to asset owners who invest in commingled or pooled funds?
So I think the main two tools that are available to asset owners that invest in pooled or commingled funds, which maybe weren't available to them a few years back, firstly around proxy voting and secondly around collaborative engagement or collaborative stewardship. So on proxy voting, something that asset owners have long been calling for is the ability to direct proxy votes for themselves rather than take the index or managers proxy voting policies. And we've just had in Q3 of 2021 one particularly big passive index manager announced that clients, asset owners invested in their commingled or pooled funds can choose from a menu of third-party proxy voting policies, or they can vote directly on select resolutions or companies, or they can continue to use that index provider's proxies. So that's a real change, and we expect potentially other index managers to follow suit to provide that flexibility for then asset owners of all sizes to be able to have much more direction over their proxy votes, which I think is a real game changer. And then secondly, around collaborative engagements, things like Climate Action 100 Plus, to me, this is the most successful, most well-organized, clearest, target goal-orientated collaborative engagement that's emerged in the past few years, with real world impacts on emissions reductions. And you know, the joining things like Climate Action 100 Plus are available to those asset owners invested in commingled or pooled funds, free to join. And we expect other sort of well-resourced, well-targeted collaborative engagements to be available to those asset owners invested in commingled or pooled funds soon.
Marcel, turning to you, I wonder if you had any specific examples of this in action, especially in the selection of pooled funds.
On the selection side of pooled structures, your influence is, of course, less than in segregated accounts, but you can still do a couple of things. You can still set your expectations and try to find those managers, those pooled structures that actually live up to your policy objectives. That's one thing. And that's, for example, where we have seen, that's a Dutch example, and it's focused on outcomes. In the Dutch market, we have had an initiative to basically avoid or mitigate negative impacts from companies on the OECD guidelines on multinational corporations or the UN guiding principles on human rights. And how asset owners can actually contribute that. Of course, through segregated structures, that's much easier. But by working together as a Dutch asset owner base, all pension funds have basically come together to set up their approach to this. They've set their expectations to awards, also pool structures. And what we have seen is also pool structures rethink some of their offerings. And this is maybe just Dutch. And well, the Dutch market is big, but it's still just Dutch. What the SFDR does then is the same. They talk about same underlying do no harm, no significant harm principles, which are, again, also the OECD guidelines and the UN guiding principles. And that asset managers and asset owners have to report to it. Also, pooled structures, ensuring also those asset owners that have objectives towards those outcomes, those human rights outcomes, for example, will see solutions being brought to market simply also because there's increasing standardization in the industry. So while you might not be able to influence on your own the exact description of what's being done in the full structure, the increasing initiatives where asset owners collaborate or where also regulators come in is enabling pooled structures that actually offer solutions to the objectives of pension funds and asset owners.
In our report, we talk about the importance of adding a focus on sustainability outcomes to investment mandates. Can you explain what we mean by this and why it's of increasing relevance to asset owners?
Well, if you think about the perspective I've described, where asset owners have focused initially very much on, you know, risk and opportunity of what sustainability in the real world actually means for the investment portfolio. This thinking about outcomes and the sustainable development goals are an important framework for that. It's about where should our portfolios also contribute? And that's also what beneficiaries increasingly are asking. And they would like their pension fund also to do good, or at least not to do harm to people or the environment. And so expect those portfolios also to have more or better positive outcomes in the real world and less negative outcomes. And so that means that's increasingly being embedded in policies of asset owners. And that then means also thinking through how can you integrate that in mandates. And it's not that much different as ESG. The main difference is for ESG, we have developed an enormous amount of data the last two decades and approaches and solutions. And for outcomes, we're still on the beginning of that curve. So we need better data. We need better data on what outcomes are we actually impacting in the real world. What kind of data points do I need for that? On ESG, a lot of the focus has been on process, the processes of companies and their operations, their activities, less on their products and services and the impact they have. The focus on outcomes tries to do both, not just the performance of the company, the operations of the company in which you're invested, but also their products and services and how they actually help us achieving a more sustainable world, or are they help us achieving the SDGs? And then again, the same instruments come to play. So stewardship to bring change, but also selecting the right companies and ensuring that investment mandates actually capture that. So I think this is pivotal work, and we see an increasing amount of investors trying to embed that in investment mandates. But we're still on a learning, on the steep side of the learning curve, so to speak.
Daniel, I wonder, having worked on this report and dealing with clients who are struggling with incorporating outcomes into investment mandates and the broader process and selecting, appointing and monitoring asset managers, whether you had any further reflections?
Well, I think sort of coming back to this idea of, climate taker or sort of ESG taker, I think the sort of first is trying to identify where in the portfolio you might have unidentified exposure to certain ESG risks. So I still, really recommend, that sort of gateway climate or ESG risk assessment across the portfolio as being a starting point, knowing where your baseline is before then determining what kind of course of action to take. Just because the in terms of those actions, the way I'm thinking about it is as a mix of sort of defense and offense. And so I think the defense approach might be some of these more kind of housekeeping items around monitoring of the existing investment mandates, ongoing sort of deeper questions around whether the active manager, for example, is being compensated financially for taking on ESG risks. Maybe there's other sort of defense kind of actions that, or sort of lower hanging fruit actions that the asset owner can take, for example, to avoid some emissions in the portfolio, such as a climate aware index or a lower carbon index versus a market cap weighted index. And then there's the more offense kind of strategy, which may involve kind of crafting new dedicated ESG or impact mandates with very clear sort of real world impact measurement. And I think there will be a place for that. We're seeing some of those emerge. We highlight in the report one example of New York City that issued a specific sort of RFP for a climate solutions fund across public equity and public fixed income. And we're seeing that kind of dedicated, more sort of offense strategy, asset owners with a very clear investment thesis that there are, huge growth opportunities from, for example, meeting the UN Sustainable Development Goals. Decarbonization is arguably the growth theme of the 21st century, with entire, transport, food, energy, water systems undergoing fundamental change. And when you think about the capital, the services and the products required to deliver on that, I could see there being managers and mandates that are really well set up to be able to exploit those opportunities. So the more confident the asset owner feels they can source those opportunities, the more we may see those kind of dedicated ESG mandates.
Thanks, Daniel. Marcel, maybe one last word.
Thanks, Toby. Well, on this offense and defense, I think that's a crucial distinction. And I don't think outcomes is just a pure perspective of doing good for the world. I think this feedback loop, what increasingly asset owners are seeing, they are universal owners. They hold the entire economy and they hold it for a long term. And what happens in terms of, for example, the climate crisis is ultimately a risk to their portfolio. And so a focus on outcomes does two things. Actually, it helps think of, in terms of the longer term, that feedback loop ultimately in the risk and opportunities for your own portfolio. But by looking at that outcome in the interim, and having better data and assessing that, having a better risk and opportunity lens than you currently have for a pure ESG lens. So I think it's also not just the offense, it's a bit of both. But the distinction helps. But in terms of the long-term perspective and the short-term perspective, there's also it's also a proxy for unknown risks and opportunities. And for asset owners especially, it's important to understand those unknown risks and opportunities.
Daniel, just tying up, in 2022, what kind of single action or set of actions would you suggest asset owners consider with respect to their investment mandates?
I think asset owners can really take the time to think about the minimum standards that they expect from their investment managers in terms of ESG reporting, in terms of climate commitments, in terms of their net zero goals, and really give it some thought around how to align the investment mandate to the asset owner's broader mission and goals.
Thanks, Daniel. Marcel, you've got the final word here.
Thanks, Zoe. Well, in 2022, my take will be to start with the existing portfolios and existing mandates and really ask your managers to report back what their outcomes in the real world are, to focus on that, both in terms of where they have negative outcomes, but also where they ensure positive, to better understand, but then also to align that with how you set new mandates.
Marcel, Daniel, thank you for a fascinating walk through the trials facing and rewards open to asset owners looking to integrate ESG factors and outcomes into investment mandates. PRI's paper entitled Investment Mandates, Embedding ESG Factors, Improving Sustainability Outcomes is available on PRI's website. Please do stay tuned for our next podcast on the role of blended finance in driving sustainable investing in emerging markets. And remember, if you like this episode, please do rate and subscribe. For more information about responsible investments, please go to umpri.org. Thank you and goodbye.